feature us in for our private tour. And this is just Thursday. Like, this is just what happens now. And I was very grateful. It was a great day. Great 3 days in Rome. The Colosseum. Wait till I tell you the what, and I'm not even going to say what it is. I might do a video on this, but Ben, I'll tell you privately. I get private tours of the Vatican, and I do private conversation with Ben. That's what I do now.
If y'all only knew.
The greatest moment of religious, like, faith significance that I've experienced on this trip was not in the Vatican. It was in the Colosseum. And I'll tell you about that off the air. But that it was so cool.
I know, if you know the history of the Colosseum, what that was used for many, many years, I'm not surprised by that. So I'm looking forward to our next break.
It was very cool. Very, very cool. Hey, all right, so we broke down the ACC order of finish, and Mr. B gets in and says it's the most dramatic and the weirdest preseason ACC media poll I've ever seen. I'm stunned that, honestly, there's like 23 people that didn't vote Miami number one. And you've got to think that those are people who were just totally thrown off by the tiebreakers, right? Where they're like, well, Miami found a way to not get in it, so they're not going to get in it this year, and Duke won it last year and all this stuff. You got to think that domes some people up, right? Because in this league, to me, there's like, I mean, and I know Duke wouldn't have been on the list last year, but we have to play the games on paper, okay? We can't play them in person. We have to play them on paper. There's like three, maybe four teams that can win this thing. And you got Florida State with three first place. I kind of agree with the texter. It felt like there was about 10% of the voting mass there at ACC kickoff that way overthought this. And if I'm saying that, that means you've gone way too far. Way too far in overthinking this. With that said, I have overthought one thing, Ben. I have overthought one thing. And I am going to give you a name of a player that I think cannot possibly live up to expectations, and I'm gonna break down why. But there was something that caught my attention when I was looking at this all ACC team. The number one vote getter at wide receiver is Malachi Toney from Miami. The number one vote getter as an all-purpose player was Malachi Toney from Miami. And the number one player in specialists, like the special returner, all that stuff, was Malachi Toney in Miami. And I started thinking, you know, I put Malachi Toney on my ballot. I'm looking at my ballot right now. I don't think I put him number one, honestly. I didn't. I put him third. I put him behind Deuce Robinson and Bryant Wesco. I put Malachi Toney third. And I almost left him off entirely, and I'll say why in a second. Ben, I think sophomore slumps are largely just regression to the mean. I don't really believe in that they have to happen to everybody in all circumstances, and I don't believe that they happen for no reason. I think there are reasons why they happen. I think Malachi Toney is as strong a sophomore slump candidate as there is in the country this year. Based on how his season went last year and the circumstance that he finds himself in. So let me walk this out. Last year, Malachi Toney, three-star recruit, leaps onto the scene, right? Immediately. Like, makes a splash in game one. I remember he's making plays in the first game that are unbelievable, okay? And Toney has a monster year with Carson Beck. Now, he is in, like, it's the same system, but he is being asked to be the best all-around player in the ACC, okay? He wasn't asked to do that last year. Now, he was very good, but that is a level of expectation that significantly far exceeds what he was asked to do last year. And, in fact, it significantly far exceeds what he did last year. I don't think he was the best all-purpose player in the ACC. And, listen, some of this is like, I don't have a clue who these people are. I don't know who to vote for. Like, if for example, I'm looking at my ballot, and I voted for these other things. I voted Chris Johnson Jr. for all-purpose back, which I think that's going to age very well, and Trey Richardson for specialist, because this guy returns kicks and punts for touchdowns on a regular basis, semi-regular basis. The other thing is, and this is where this gets a little bit, like I'm really trying hard to project here, that Darian Mensah is now his quarterback. Now, that's going to be better than Carson Beck, except for this. Darian Mensah's number one target from last season is with him. Miami has brought in a star-studded receiving core that is better than their overall receiving core last year. I'm going to argue that Malachi Toney may not even be the best wide receiver on his own team because you've got Cooper Barkate in there. The things that they're saying about Vandrevious Jacobs sound really interesting. Cam Vaughn was a 500-yard receiver at West Virginia last year. And by the way, they're going to run the ball because Mark Fletcher is there. I just think if you're telling me that the expectations for Malachi Toney, he had 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns receiving last year. If you're telling me that off of that, he's got to be the best receiver in the ACC, the best all-around like ball carrier yardage person in the ACC, and the best back of any kind in the ACC, I'm telling you he's falling short of that. And I'm not sure he's going to lead him in receiving yards. I think Barkate has a great chance, a great case to lead him in receiving yards. That is my pitch, Ben, that I think that is the player that, for no fault of his own, just systemic and the expectations game, that I think his season will feel like a disappointment.
I would be okay with that. I don't know that I necessarily agree with it, but I would be okay with that.
Okay. So there's that. That's my Malachi Toney thing. All right. 109 catches, like he's going to catch the balls. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you had Deuce Robinson two?
I had Robinson one.
Oh,
I think Robinson's going to have a monster year.
I think that's a good call. Isaac Brown, where'd you have, do you recall where you had Isaac Brown?
Didn't have Isaac Brown. I didn't have him.
Kevin Jennings.
Didn't put him in here. Did not. I had Mintz over Jennings. I had Sammy Brown. I did have Sammy. I had all three linebackers the same: Brown, Robinson, and Torre. My defense, I think, was about the same. I had what's the kid's name from Florida State as one of the corners?
Bryce Florida Fitzgerald. State
I did have Fitzgerald, and I like Kingston Lopa from Cal. He was recruited at Oregon in Tosh Lupoy's defense, and there's not a ton of, like, known commodities at safety in the ACC, so I gave the West Coast some love there. Probably the most controversial thing I did is I put Nate Shepard in over Isaac Brown. I think Brown is a stud, but I just think Kewon Brown's going to get touches in that backfield. And nobody's taking carries from Fletcher at Miami, and nobody's taking carries from Shepard at Duke. So Isaac Brown might be the best running back in the league, but I don't think he's going to have first-team all-conference numbers. So I'm really playing some 4D chess on that one. All right, let's go to the phones. Walt wants to chime in with this. Walt up to a road rage 3-7, which coincidentally is 9-1 a.m. Italy time. Hey, Walt.
Clark, I hope you're doing well. I'm a little worried, though. I'm a little worried about you. I'm thinking that maybe you absorbed too much heat in that building. Got a little heat stroke carrying over. Yeah, didn't you just say, William Quackenbush, that people outthink themselves? Did you not just say that?
Did I not hear you say that, yes.
Outthinking themselves? Yeah, yes. And you're not going to put Malachi Toney on the first team with a better quarterback than the end last year because a little Cooper Barkate? Cooper Barkate's not in Malachi Toney's universe. He's going to that's a nice little addition, but you're going to have a quarterback of a new favorite receiver this year. I think you.
Yeah,
you may be right.
You may be right.
Yeah,
it was
that's
heat,
true.
Well, it's heat stroke.
That's true.
It's heat stroke. It does weird things to
you.
Like it's still 100 degrees outside here.
I thought the whole team had a little heat stroke the other night, and I think you may have gotten some. You were there a long time. Plus, you've been outside. You know, you've had Coliseum and such. I think you're taking on a little too much heat. I mean, Malachi Toney is a war daddy. That's why I don't think any of this applies to him. I mean, I just think he reminds me of Santana Moss, except he might be better, and he's tough as can be. That's the other thing. I mean, he's not. This is not your normal little receiver. This guy is just hyper competitive. I don't see a collapse by him. I buy Deuce Robinson. I'm buying some Deuce Robinson, some Malachi Toney. But you know, we have to see Wesco come back healthy before we know what he is. But I think those are your two. Those would be my two receivers. And running back, again, I think Brown is the best running back. I love Shepard. I don't mind Shepard. I think we got to be careful about Fletcher. I think Fletcher had a great end to the season, but he's still primarily a power back. And, you know, he rushed for 500 yards in the playoffs, but he didn't do that all year. And so I'll be interested to see that. Obviously, they want to run the ball, but yeah, I can't see putting anybody in front of Malachi Toney. You have to sell me something better than that. But my main thing is you just got through saying I think people outthink themselves in these votes. You, my friend, I love you to death. You are outthinking yourself here.
I did overthink the Toney thing. I did. Now again, I mean, do we think? Look, if he is the best all-purpose back and the best specialist and the best wide receiver in ACC, he's winning the Heisman, right? I mean, that's the expectation. When I look at all that, I'm like, this guy has to be the best player in the nation, or people are going to be bummed.
Well, it's hard for receivers to win the Heisman. Of course, as you know, that's partly a team reward too. So
right.
We need to see what the rest of Miami is, because you know, look, I think as far as the questions about Miami go, I think there are some legitimate questions. I think that losing Bain and Mesidor, who were the two leaders on that defense, and they were great against the run and the pass, not just the pass. Like, Damon Wilson, the guy they got from Missouri, formerly of Georgia, he is an elite pass rusher. He might lead the league in sacks, but can he hold up against the run? See, if I'm playing Miami this year, the first thing I'm doing is I'm running at him to find out whether he can hold up, because he's, you know, he's 25 pounds less than Bain and Mesidor were, and when you watch him on film, the run isn't his strength. And then even the offensive line, which is filled with talent, and obviously it's Cristobal's area of expertise, you know, you lost most of that offensive line. I mean, you lost four-fifths of it, including a round-one draft pick. So, I mean, I think for the people who wonder about Miami, and again, even with those people, they didn't make the championship last year. I'll say one thing too about Georgia Tech, and what I think might be the reason that people like them. I do think it's partly coaching, and they've demonstrated they can play with elite teams. But if I'm looking at the running back situations, both in the ACC and the country, I think with Haynes and Holsley, I think they have the third best backfield in the ACC, and I think that's one of the better groupings in the country. So I think that's partly why. Plus, there's probably some sort of Mendoza trust factor based on what they just saw his older bro do.
I think it's a great point. Lest we forget, they have the higher regarded Mendoza quarterback, and the lesser guy won the Heisman. So we'll see what Brinkley does.
Sorry, no,
hey,
Walt,
I'm looking forward
you
to,
some,
to
you get some ice
go
on
ahead.
The back of your neck. You put get a nice ice pack, put that on the back of your neck. Find a place that has air conditioning. I know that's difficult in Europe, but they tell me that Italy has
more
than the other European countries. So find a respite, Quan. Find a respite. Get out of that heat. Get out of that heat.
People are asking if I'm with Bob Brook over at the rooftop bar. Great. Thanks very much, Walt. Appreciate it. I have not been day drinking today. Not today. All right. I'll tell you what. We got a couple things to do here. We'll come back and hit them. We gotta. I wanna give Ben a chance to talk about his favorite basketball coach in all the Springsteen here.
Oh,
like, it's to the point that it's weird. Like,
maybe, hey, they can have him.
Maybe the Italians are big fans.
They can have him.
We just could. Rick Bagby's the one that brought up. He's like, have y'all noticed the amount of Springsteen that we've been hearing? And I started to pick it up, and it is an inordinate amount of Springsteen just in the normal playlist whenever you're inside of a spot. And yeah, we're happy to trade him. I don't know what you trade him for, but we'll be happy to do that.
How about red wine? How about just straight up red wine?
Ben, for no reason at all, there are two things I wish we could talk about on Wednesday. For no reason at all, I looked up, what does a national letter of intent bind you to? Just to see, you know, how many ways Ole Miss violated the contract of an NLI. I don't know if you've read anything about this, but there was a USA Today column by Matt Hayes where he basically just destroyed Ole Miss, where he essentially was like, hey, everyone loved when Ole Miss was telling it like it is and being the truth teller and being like, yeah, this thing's dirty. Like, he just lays it out, man. He laid it all out there. And then he's like, and then you ruined it because you filed a lawsuit against LSU over less than $1 million. And it's like, you could have just been that person or that program that just is like, yeah, you know what, middle finger to the man. We don't care. We're not following any of your stupid rules. Nobody cares about the rules anyway. But instead, you do care about the rules. And so he essentially points out that because you tried to do the thing, you now get called a hypocrite. So all of the charges that have been leveled against, you know, Dabo for hypocrisy or whatever you want to say, they now can be leveled against Ole Miss. It was an interesting tactic. I know we've had a couple days to sit with this, but I appreciated that Matt Hayes went after Ole Miss for the hypocrisy of, hey, no one cares about any rules and, you know, everything. Oh, recruiting's been dirty for 100 years and nobody's ever said that it's for choir boys and whatever else, whatever garbage Pete Golding said. And then the next day, they go into court with their Dilbert glasses on going, the terms of the contract that you signed would indicate that you now owe $438,000 and 72 cents or whatever. It's just a joke, Ben. And good on Matt Hayes, a national reporter, for standing up and saying that plainly, that they are now hypocrites, even though they tried to tell us that we were the squares for trying to follow the rules. I just so appreciate it. Any more thoughts on Ole Miss?
I agree with all of that, but I'm going to shock you, Kwok, to the point that you may consider not coming back into this country. I also recognize the difference between what happened at Clemson, which, again, they cheated, not in any way saying that. But the Ole Miss approach to this is going to be that it was a financial contract, and they're going to say it's different than what we did with Luke Farrelly, because you guys never had him sign an NIL contract. You know, he had not gotten around to doing it. That doesn't change any of the academics. That doesn't change the fact that he was in class, all that, you know. And they tried to make it, draw a distinction between the two. Where I do agree with Ole Miss, and that's the part I'm sure is going to shock you. These guys took the money and left. I mean, plain and simple, they took the money and left. And had a contract that said you have to repay it, and now they don't want to. It's sort of like, you know, a signing bonus that had stipulations, and they didn't meet those stipulations, and they don't want to give the money back. So I am not at all surprised. I'm also not surprised that we don't hear that, like, Ole Miss fans have been MIA online. You know, that you can't find them with the Hubble telescope.
Oh no, because they're all getting their fake law degrees. They're all just rummaging through the law books so they can figure out legally why this is different. See, I agree with you. Legally, it is different. It is different to break a contract with financial stakes than it is to break a national letter of intent. Okay, and again, I looked it up because, you know, I'm trying to figure out. It is different. You know, financial aid documents and all that kind of stuff. Luke Farrelly did not have a signed NIL agreement. He did
it's
not.
The same principle. It's just a different arena, pretty much.
Ethically, it is the same. Legally, it is not. Ethically, it is the ethical dilemma of, do we encourage someone to breach a signed contract? Because that's what they did to Luke Farrelly. They were texting him in class knowing that you can't attend class without signing a binding contract. So they were willing to try to remove him from that contract or help him do that, but they are not willing to do it when there's money on the line. And listen, yes, there are hundreds of thousands of dollars that they are out. It's just the ethical dilemma of, like, the thing that you're teaching, if you're just the kids out there, the thing that you're teaching Ole Miss is that it's okay when there's no money involved to breach a contract. But if there's money involved, you better get it. You better get that money. And I think it is. I think they're hypocrites. But I agree with you that the process that Clemson could undergo for damages or whatever is dramatically different because of the types of contracts that we're talking about. And even legally, it'd be different.
You know, isn't it?
Think
about this for just a moment. How sad of a reality it is that it is much more difficult to enforce the academic contract, the academic and eligibility contract of today's athlete than it is the financial contract with today's athlete.
It's very sad. It's very sad. You know what is also sad, Ben? I'm glad you brought this up. You know what's sad is there's another kind of contract we need to talk about that is, I mean, they're just broken all the time for 100 reasons, not casting aspersions. The marital contract, Ben, it's a toughie, especially, like, you put a couple decades in, it's difficult, all right? 26 years, multiple kids, I mean, that's a tragedy, right? That's a tragedy, especially when your new wife is almost as old as your now dead marriage. It's not a good look for your very good mentor, some would say, Nate Oates, who married his former admin, 20 years his youth. Again, just five. She was 5 years old when he and his wife got married. His wife battled cancer while she was the admin, you can do what you want with that. I just wondered if you had any congratulations or anything you wanted to say to Nate Oates on his big day.
You know, a huge part of coaching is being able to recruit fine young talent. And Nate has recruited fine young talent here. You hear all the time about being married to the program. And in Nate Oates' case, he's literally married to the program now. So, I mean, the man practices what he preaches, man. I need young talent. I need to be married to the program. I believe in the organizational chart. He doesn't need a portal here. He just it's Nate. Listen, there's nothing wrong with marrying someone 20 years younger than you. No, in fact, I know I've got several friends who have done that. And I hate divorce, but it is a reality of this world. It happens all the time. When you insert Nate Oates' name into this, it just makes it feel gross, and I can't put my finger on it. Nate's not done. I mean, you know, this has happened many times, unfortunately. Workplace chemistry.
Isn't this Bob? Oh my God, workplace chemistry, Ben Milstead. This has to be like, this is Bobby Petrino without the motorcycle, right? I mean, she, like, she was his admin for years. And you know what's funny? You know what? It's not funny. It's not funny. But I need to tell you the first thing I thought about, okay? I saw this story about Nate Oates. Again, he's 51, I believe, and he's married a 31-year-old. And I thought to myself, this guy's a moron. His wife is hotter than the 31-year-old. Like, you, isn't there a certain level of physical attractiveness?
So he didn't.
If you're gonna, and
he
look,
didn't marry up. Is that what you're saying?
No, he married a Tuscaloosa 5, Ben. This is a joke.
You caught her. I'm thinking I'm gonna 5.
I'm thinking I'm gonna see a, you know, like Bobby Petrino's mistress. Like, yeah, give her a raise. Like, yes, yeah, whatever you want. Yeah. I'm thinking I'm gonna look at that. I'm not thinking I'm looking at Laura Ingalls Wilder out there. Ben, it is not worth. I'm like, Nate, what have you done, man? I keep thinking, like, oh, I better stop. I just keep thinking about, like, what other reasons? What other reasons, Nate? Oh, man. Like, when you think about, like, the Alabama men's basketball. I don't know if I've ever had a conversation like this on air, but this is the first thing that came to my mind. The Alabama men's basketball coach is marrying his former admin. You just get – don't you get a picture in your mind? You get a picture in your mind. That's what she looks like. Yep. Sorority row. That's what it is. That's what she looks like. Man, that is not what Mrs. Oates looks like, okay? That's not what you're getting, okay?
I did see this. I'm not taking credit for it. Someone online said, Alabama thinks of everything. They have a succession plan for everything, even the coach's dating life. So that's...
that's so mean. That's just mean. I was so taken aback. I was like, I can't tweet this. Like, the internet can't remember that I feel this way. But it's got to be said, like, I feel it was a waste. Like, she may be a great person, and I hope she has a great personality, because they're going to need that for this marriage to work.
I've seen many comments referencing she must have a great personality. Yes, I have.
I mean, I feel bad, but it's got to be said, man. It's got to be said. If you're asking me would I rather have wife one or wife two, I'm saying wife one. I'm going to give you wife one. Oh, man. Good times for Nate Oates. All right, final segment. I'm going to give you some Braves names. Trade deadline. Nationals this weekend. We'll wrap up the show with some nonsense live from Florence, Italy, right after this.
Got a busy life and missed your favorite show? The best sports talk plays on your schedule.
Yeah, baby.
All shows are online on the podcast page
and ready to play when you want.
This is awesome.
Download the Roar app or visit theroarfm.com.
Let me tell you about our friends at Ingles. Low prices, love the savings. I wish I had saved it. We got a text. It was way earlier in the show. Somebody said, hey, I've got a family that comes over from Italy, and they absolutely love Ingles. And I thought to myself, well, obviously that's true, because Ingles has the fresh produce, and they have the deli meat, and they have the Starbucks, and they have the wide aisles, and they have an experience that you just can't make up. You absolutely can't. Ingles is 100% a destination for Italians going over to America. I'm looking at the text right now. My uncle borrowed my mom's car once to go to Ingles for stuff for tiramisu and lasagna. Wrecked my mom's car on the way. We could talk about that a little bit. And not even that could deter him from going into Ingles. Italians know, Ben. You shop at Ingles. Low prices, love the savings.
We got your summer covered.
Summer sports station.
105.5 and 97.5, The Roar.
No one ever wants to deal with roof trouble, but when it happens, it's comforting to know who to call. Your roof protects your home, your family, and everything inside, and that kind of trust really matters. That's why so many upstate families turn to Joe Robertson & Son Roofing.
Family-owned and operated since 1965, Joe Robertson & Son has been taking care of homes and businesses across the upstate for decades. They believe in doing things the right way, with quality craftsmanship, honest answers, and a neighbor-first approach. From small repairs to complete roof replacements, their team takes pride in their work.
When it comes to your roof, don't cut corners. Choose the name families across the upstate have trusted for years, Joe Robertson and Son Roofing. Rely on the upstate's most trusted roofing experts since 1965. Get started today.
Call 864-246-0886 or visit robersonroofing.net.
The strongest connections are made right here at home. Since 2020, Upcountry Fiber has been a neighbor you can count on, with the fastest, most reliable internet in the upstate and a local team ready to assist when you need us. Switch today for smoother streaming, seamless remote work, and as a thank you for joining us, enjoy a complimentary speed increase for 12 months. Visit upcountryfiber.com/year-of-internet to learn more. Terms and conditions apply.
If you are a realtor in the upstate of South Carolina, I want to help you close more deals. And here's how I can do that. I'm Mike. I'm the owner of One Tom Plumber, and we are already working with realtors in your area doing the same exact thing. We're the go-to plumbing crew for realtors all across the state of South Carolina because we provide a free same-day quote based on your home inspection report.
Just dial the number one, then Tom Plumber. That's their name. That's their number.
Call the plumber whose name is his number. One Tom Plumber. One Tom Plumber.
Are you ready to fly out west? Breeze Airways is back with the region's only nonstop flights to Los Angeles, California from GSP International Airport. Enjoy low fares, no change or cancellation fees, and convenient nonstop service. Make your next trip seriously nice on Breeze Airways. Visit flybreeze.com to book your flight from GSP today.
Buying a mattress is painful. That's why we developed the Duo Mattress, a patented two-piece mattress design that makes this process easy. The Duo is the most cost-effective, sustainable, adaptable, and comfortable mattress you've ever experienced. With our 100-night sleep trial and unique comfort exchange, you can rest easy knowing you're taken care of with engineered sleep.
This is Christopher Pratt, founding partner at Pratt Injury Lawyers in Anderson. This is more than just a place on a map. This is our home. Whether it's a car wreck on I-85 or a sudden workplace injury, you should not have to face it alone. At Pratt Injury Lawyers, we're not just attorneys, we're your neighbors. We've spent over 15 years in the trenches protecting our hometown by standing up for people who live here. Visit us at 864law.com today for a free, no obligation consultation. Pratt Injury Lawyers, protecting our hometown.
If you're just looking for a place to talk some ball,
heck yeah, let's go!
Falcon Banner, who you want to call?
No gimmicks.
No gimmicks.
Just sports.
Out of bounds.
Right here on The Roar,
your upstate sports authority.
Last segment of the show, last segment of the week, dare I say, last segment of the month. August starts at midnight tonight. That means college football month, folks. We've almost made it. We've almost made it. Quas?
I'm sorry.
What happened?
Mr. Anna Fender, I seen it right when we're coming back. Text says Nato's new wife can best be described as quite handsome. That's way meaner than what I said.
She'll forever be a Tuscaloosa 5.
Tuscaloosa 5. He said quite handsome. Oh, man. I'm crying.
Tuscaloosa 5.
I cried down
I'm not
face.
Ever getting over that.
Oh man, Ben, it's been a good month. It's been a chock full month. You were talking about the end of the month, man. August, we are less than a week from the start of camp. Florida State's already started camp. The week zero teams have already started, or I think some started yesterday, maybe some today. And So we are fully in camp season, 100%, and can't wait to bring you some of that next week. Before we get to some wrap up here, let's go to the phones. Our friend Jason joins the program here. Other Jason, what's up, Jason?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know what, the MLB trade deadline coming up, this show kind of brings back the memories of trades in the past that have been good, not been good. You know, one of the first ones that comes to my mind, you know, was great Noah Alexander, kind of a below average pitcher. And to the Tigers, he of course poured up with the Tigers, so he went 9-0 or something like that. And of course, got John Smoltz for him, and Smoltz was kind of a mid-level prospect for Tigers. And, you know, and you think of Jeff Bagwell traded for a relief pitcher setup man, Larry Anderson, I think was his name. And, you know, if obviously hindsight, the trades were not worth it, but if they had won the World Series, then, yeah, even if you're giving up Hall of Famers in the long run, yeah, I think you would probably take it. I remember, of course, Fred, and a lot of it has to do with supply and demand, what you get, what you have to give up. Braves acquired Fred McGriff. The Padres were in the middle of a fire sale, and they got rid of Sheffield, maybe Tony Fernandez the same season. And at that time, of course, you only had two division winners. They weren't a lot of teams looking for first base, and Braves were really the only one, so they got him for nothing. But the one that aggravates me as a Braves fan, y'all are probably going to guess which one it is, was the Mark Teixeira trade.
Yeah,
and,
that's it.
Giving up one of the best closers in the game for a few years. That shortstop, Elvis Andrus, was a solid player for several years. Even a guy like Matt Harrison, he was a solid 3 or 4 starter. And then there was a catcher had the name of Salty something. He was actually considered
Salty Lamacchia. Yeah, Jared Salty Lamacchia.
Yeah, and he was considered Rex the top prospect given up in the trade. He didn't wind up doing much, but I remember at the time I was like, man, this is a good trade. And one reason the Braves had to give up so much, and I guess one reason the Braves were willing to give that up, Teixeira had another year on his contract. He was, you know, signed through 2008 too. But at that time, man, the Braves needed more than another bat. They were, you know, pretty weak at pitching, and they got 5 games out of the Phillies. I don't know what they were at the wild card at the time. But, you know, it was just, wound up being just a horrible trade for the Braves the next year. And what made it even worse, when they traded him to the Angels, they got pretty much nothing for return. It's kind of a mid-level first baseman, you know. And then the Angels lost him in free agency. And this is kind of the big kicker. You know, they got a compensation pick, and their compensation pick they get for losing Teixeira, you know, to the Yankees for losing him, was they got Mike Trout. So everybody was turned up on the good end except the Braves. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year. You know, that's so much that there's so many more teams now in the playoffs. Well, you know, that's so many more playoff spots. What do you do? That's why I'd like to see the playoff, the trade deadline even moved up to maybe to the middle of August, because maybe there might be a couple more teams drop out of the playoffs, decide they're going to be sellers, not buyers, not buyers. And, you know, it's, I don't know, it's definitely a lot has changed over the years through the trade deadline. And it also used to be an August 31st a trade deadline, which was if you were there for 10 years in a major league or 5 years with one team, you were eligible. So definitely a lot has changed with that. So anyway, just want to share some of those memories I've got of the trades, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks very much, Jason. Appreciate the phone call. Boy, the Teixeira trade, that's tough. That's tough to bring that one up. Casey Kochman, by the way, that first baseman. Never forget the Casey Kochman era. Ben, you excited about this trade deadline for the Bravos?
Ask me Tuesday. I don't know.
what do you want the Braves to go after? What's your if you could have it your way, What do you feel like the Braves need?
I happen to think they need more than what most Braves fans think they need. You can never have enough pitching, and I think the Braves need another starter. So my number one on the Ben Milstead wish list is another solid starter that then, you know, maybe then you can relegate some guys to the bullpen or, you know, what have you. But I think you need another starter.
I think you do too, and it remains to be seen what caliber of starter. Now, I know the Braves have been linked to Tarik Skubal. He got a nice ovation and kind of hat tipped the fans in Detroit. That is not my favorite Detroit pitcher that's been linked to the Braves, because I just think the Skubal prospect cost is enormous. And I think the Braves need some other things. I just don't think they have the prospect capital to go get Skubal and then address other needs. I think they should go after Casey Mize. Casey Mize had a really good year. To me, he's your number two or three starter when he comes in, probably your number two starter coming in. You're going to get Strider back late. You can maybe hope that he's healthy and can sprint to the finish. You don't need him from now to the end. You need him like September, October. That's what you need. So going into the postseason with like Sale and Strider and Mize, that's a really good group of pitchers. Some other names that I like, the Mariners. I'm not sure the farm system of the Braves matches what the Mariners are potentially looking for, but I think both Emerson Hancock, who's a younger, more controllable right-hand arm out of Georgia, and Luis Castillo, who's a little bit older, like he's got some experience in the postseason, that kind of thing. And then Michael Wacha, if you just need an innings eater, which I think the Braves do need an innings eater starting pitcher, if you miss out on Skubal, you miss out on Mize, you miss out on some of the other like higher level arms, then you could get Michael Wacha and be okay. So that's it on the pitch. I agree with you on the starters. The bullpen's getting a little tired, but I think getting Robert Suarez back will help. Do you agree with that? Like I don't know that they, maybe if something fits, maybe another lefty or somewhere, but I think getting Suarez back will fix the bullpen and slide everybody back where they should be.
Yeah, you've just had so many injuries, it's tough to really know for sure what you need.
Let me give you a couple, okay? By the way, can I just say, Casey Mize was scratched from his start today. Freddie Peralta, I'm seeing this just within the last 15 minutes. The Mets scratched Freddie Peralta from the start because of trade interest. That is so dumb. Like, if you're going to trade a guy, trade him. Don't scratch a guy from a star because you might trade him. I understand you don't want him to get hurt or anything like that, but come on, God, what are we doing? Are we just losing tonight on purpose? We're going to bullpen game it tonight on purpose because we might trade Freddie Peralta? Give me a freaking break. But that is a nice signal that a guy is for sure open for business. That's one way to do it without sending out 30 emails, I guess. So Freddie Peralta would be on the list. I doubt the Mets are going to try to help the Braves win a World Series, though. I think they need a right-hand bat, Ben, and there's two different ways they can go about it. The hard way would be to go try to find a shortstop. Now, there's not a lot of shortstops on the market, not a lot of right-hand shortstops on the market, like true shortstops. Zach Neto from the Angels is the big one. To me, that is like, that could be a multi-year, like what you were hoping you would find at shortstop. You could move Dubon to a corner outfield and more of a utility situation, which is a better fit for him anyway. If you can find a shortstop, but Neto is going to be really highly sought after, very good defensively, a much improved bat. I think the most likely thing the Braves do is they do something like Casey Mize, and then they go and get a right-hand outfield bat like a Taylor Ward from the Orioles, who's been really good against lefties but has hit righties good this year. Elliot Ramos has been good against lefties. Lane Thomas from the Royals has hit lefties really well. And then George Springer, older guy, he's having a decent year. Get him for the stretch run. Give me a right-hand outfield bat. Let Dubon play shortstop and figure out shortstop in the offseason.
Who do you think on the 40-man right now could be on the trade deadline, on the trade market? Like, who is it that they would give up?
Okay, so this is William Quackenbush now. This is not what I think they'll do. I would look to move Sean Murphy. I would. You have Drake Baldwin. You have Joey Barr. You can get a catcher back in a trade somewhere or pick somebody up as an emergency third. You just signed Kyle Farmer back. Remember they were letting Farmer catch in Triple A. He's caught at the big league level before. I think you try to move Murphy as a part of a deal or something because he's been hurt. But I think that is the one area of surplus where there's not a lot of value on the market. I've been saying that. Like, the Braves have a surplus catcher where there are not a lot of catchers out there, and a lot of teams need it. So, to me, if I'm looking at one guy, I'm looking at Sean Murphy as one that could be moved. You could move Bart. That would probably be a little bit easier. But it feels like you're rebuilding a little value as a backup catcher for him. I think this is a good chance to see if you can find a long-term home for Murphy in one of your trades for a top half of the rotation starter or for a right-hand bat in your lineup.
Yeah, you know what? I'm with you on that. I really like him, but you have figured out life without him, and I still think he's a great catcher when healthy. But his best value to you right now might just be the trade market.
I would say this too, that one of those guys who have bumped their heads at the big league level, like J.R. Ritchie or an Owen Murphy, Smith Shawver, Waldrop, like some of these guys, even Schwellenbach, I know they're hurt, but you could also include some of those guys as immediate or immediate-ish help to somebody. If you're going to go after Skubal or Mize or Hancock or some of these other ones, maybe replace them.